This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 668 in the series. This session of the radio show shares the Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on Tuesday, November 23rd, 2021. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. School committee members were in the municipal building along with some of the public. Other members of the public joined via conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. The recording of the public meeting runs just over 2 hours and 15 minutes. School committees entered executive session and returned approximately 45 minutes later to the public meeting for about 1 minute before closing the meeting. I split the meeting into two audio segments. First covers the opening superintendent's report and the MCAS presentation, about an hour and 7 minutes. Part two covers the discussion action items, discussion only items, the consent agenda through to the executive session. I leave out the 45 minute break, but do include the 1 minute when they come back with the FEA memorandum of understanding before closing the meeting. That runs about an hour and 8 minutes. Links to the meeting agenda and associated documents released for this meeting are included in the show notes. The links to my notes taken during the meeting are also provided. So let's listen to this segment of the school committee meeting, November 23rd, 2021.
All right, so Dr. Hearn, discussion action items.
Sure, there's two discussion action items this evening. The first one is a proposed job description for the school committee. So when there's a policy that you have related to new positions, and it is up to the school committee to approve new job descriptions. So the proposal here is for a director of diversity, equity, and inclusion. We've been talking about this for a couple of meetings now. It first came forward as part of the ESSER 3 plan with a different title under the Director of Social Emotional Learning and Equity. But as we work through the job description and the roles and responsibilities, and when I say we, it was largely something that we did in the central office. Lucas weighed in and Paula weighed in. Both of their offices do a tremendous amount with both diversity, equity, and inclusion and social emotional learning. But as we worked through the job description, as we looked at job descriptions from some other communities, and we thought about the needs here in Franklin, we thought that a director of diversity, equity, and inclusion is more clear in terms of what we think our needs are in terms of supporting the entire organization. The director of diversity, equity, and inclusion would be a resource for students, a resource for faculty and staff, and a resource for administrators. In terms of our overall goals of affirming diversity, promoting equity, and cultivating a culture of inclusion. In the job description, we have listed, it's in the customary format that the Franklin Public Schools job descriptions are. We listed qualifications, and some reporting relationships and performance responsibilities. And I did reach out to a few directors of diversity, equity, and inclusion. There are an increasing number of individuals serving in this role in districts across Massachusetts, and asked for their input as well in reviewing the job description. We have consulted with a director of diversity, equity, and inclusion to provide support to our students. There is a director of DEI from the Bedford Public Schools who's currently coming in and working with high school students and middle school students in resource groups. And so the idea there, I think what it does is it serves to point out one of the tangible needs and tangible responsibilities and opportunities that a director would then come in and assist us with. That's just one particular example. So tonight I'm asking for your approval for the new position. I would like to initiate a search to see if we can bring on a director this spring, perhaps as early as March 1st. However, I do also want to be patient and get the right person in the role. And so it may be a July 1 start if it's a person with administrative experience. Administrative contracts typically have some sort of notification clause, so we would have to honor that. But having the job description approved would allow us to begin the recruitment and selection process. And so tonight I am asking and recommending approval of the new position, job description of the Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion as discussed.
Is there a motion to approve the new position of Director of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion as discussed?
So moved.
Second.
All right, are there any discussion, questions? Camille? None? Dave? Mm-hmm. Al?
No.
Dave?
Yes. Through you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much. This is, such an important position that we have in Phil. Thank you for putting this together. Dr. Hernan's, we want Franklin Public Schools to be as opening and inclusive and welcoming to everyone as possible. And so this is fantastic. I look forward to this. Just a couple clarifying questions. So in terms of carrying out the equity audit and this mission, so where are we right now in terms of doing that? Where does this fit into the grand scheme of that?
Sure. So the equity audit is, we've received three quotes or proposals back to us that we're currently in the process of reviewing. This individual, I think it depends on when the timing of hiring occurs. This individual may be assisting us with some of the equity audit components, or if it's later, more towards July, using the equity audit and crafting kind of an actionable plan with the team from the recommendations that come from that audit.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, thank you. And I think what you just mentioned was related to another question I had in terms of how active will the director be in terms of the recommendations of the equity audit. So will it be more that the director carries out the recommendations, or the director the policy recommendations, or that the director will craft policy recommendations from that, or will it sort of be a combination of both?
I think it'll be a combination. I think there may be some recommendations that come from the audit that would fall within this person's responsibilities. There may also be recommendations that come from the equity audit that fall, for example, within the school committee's purview. And so we as a team, including the director, would be making some recommendations to some of your policies for action for you. There could also be, from an administrative team perspective, some of the things that we need to do together, and the director would be facilitating or helping with that. So probably everything, direct responsibility, and then also advising, depending upon what the example is.
Excellent. Yeah, that's that sounds great to us in terms of that we'll have an active role in that as well, where it is our purview. So I look forward to that discussion. Then one last thing. So I noticed in the responsibilities is creating and implementing restorative and accountable practices. That sounds very fascinating and interesting to me. So in terms of that, will that be like new policies that this director will be implementing, or do we already have a policy in place, or will it be also maybe a little bit of both?
It's so it is something that's currently in place, and I would say developing.
Okay.
So it's an area that's developing under Lucas's leadership with the principals and assistant principals, and it manifests in our school handbooks, and handbooks are policy for your approval at the beginning of the school year. Lucas, do you want to talk briefly about that?
I'll be brief in saying that we are in the process of implementing a position like this. Really helps strengthen that. I think you heard a little bit about MTSS in Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3. Ms. Stokes referenced it as it relates to behavior, and that's an area where we see a need. So I can just say that having someone in this position to help us identify targets and look at our programming. And another area I would mention is with curriculum as well, and course selection, and really trying to look at an audit. I think that also plays in with Dr. Ashley and Dr. Rogers as well in their work. So I think recommendations can be made all around. As far as restorative practices, there's restorative practices in general to help us make situations whole. We're in the process of developing some forward-facing documents for you all and the community and families to access so they can understand our processes and how we operate. But someone in this role would certainly help us specifically as it relates to diversity, equity, inclusion as part of that work.
Wonderful. So be partly adapting what's already going on while also continue
to expand,
evolve, and in line with their area of expertise. Yeah, thank you very much.
Elise?
Hi, I've got a couple. So there's some perceptions that we hear out in the community that we have too many administrators. So I guess just a question to ask why the decision was made initially to create another administration position instead of a position that works directly with students.
Sure. So it's an administrative position, but it will have, the position does have direct work with students. As I noted, it's kind of a resource across the entire organization. One of the things that I noted when we talked about the ESSER III grant was that we've added, because of the needs of students as a result of the pandemic, we have added counselors, we've added teachers, we've added paraprofessionals, we've added nurses. But we have not added administrators. We, in a budget neutral way, split the teaching and learning office into two and reduced some stipends. But there is additional needs. There's multiple pandemics you may hear people talk about. And in light of some of the recent events, there is a real call and a real need and a moral imperative to address diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so as we were thinking about what our needs are in the district, we are proposing an additional administrator as a means of supporting everybody, including all of our students, in creating a safer, more inclusive environment for all.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. One other little question. So that second to last bullet talks about this position, the person will remain abreast of developments and innovations in the field. And so I guess just a question there as far as, so PD is important, right? So professional development is important, and especially if the district's gonna be leaning on this person, probably to provide a good amount of guidance and support and professional development probably themselves. So it's not like they're gonna be able to get their PD within the district, so they're gonna need to go somewhere else. And so staying current is important for a position like this. All positions, but you know, things change really quickly, and I would just wonder, I guess, if there's funds allocated to the PD for this position.
Yeah, so administrative contracts typically have an amount allocated for professional development, so this would be along those same lines, and there is a line item in the budget for administrator professional development.
Okay.
So I can't tell you what number it is, but okay. But there is money set aside for admin PD.
Good. I wanted to make sure that that's such an important piece of a role like that, that there's funds reserved for that. Okay, thank you. That's it. Megan?
Through you, Madam Chair. I think this is a great position. I know out in the corporate world and other, you know, educational areas that it's, you know, really important. So I think it's great. That's all I have. Thank you.
I did just have one question. I know that it says that it is going to be funded with the ESSER III. What happens when the ESSER III runs out?
So I think, like many of the positions that we have talked about and planned, one of the things that we'll need to do together as a team with the committee is plan for future funding years. It is something that we are going to need to be planning for.
All right, so we have a motion and a second. So let's see, so we are proposing. All right, so any other questions, comments, nothing? All right, so a vote will come on the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? All right, motion carries.
You.
I was told last time people couldn't hear on Zoom me banging the hour.
I know. Dr. Hurd. All right. The second discussion action item is a proposal for your consideration related to having masks be optional at Franklin High School for vaccinated students and staff. I took the memo that's in your packet and created a small set of slides to kind of anchor the discussion, both for people who are viewing from home as well as people in the audience. So Mr. Jagir will bring those up.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Sherlock. So next slide, please. So here are some summary points. So back on, I want to say it was November 8th, Franklin High School received a mask requirement waiver For Franklin High School, the waiver is limited to Franklin High School because we had to identify the percentage of students and staff in the building who are vaccinated. The overall vaccination rate at Franklin High School is 82%, so it meets the Department of Education's threshold. And this number has been verified by immunization records. So later on, we'll talk a little bit about potential process, but we do have verification by immunization records collected by the health offices of this 82%. There have been only 10 cases at Franklin High School since the start of the school year, which is, at the time that I published the memo, it was 10% of the Franklin Public Schools cases, but it has a disproportionate number of the population. We've had no evidence of in-school transmission or clusters at Franklin High School this year or last year. And I just say, this last bullet, I think just speaks to trying to paint a picture of a little bit of what the high school is like, and the idea that I think people are doing their best with the current mask mandate, but we are not socially distanced in the cafeteria, and we do have hundreds of students who are not wearing their mask for 25 minutes at a time. Students are also, in the regular lives, going to places and events where there is no mask mandate. So it just sort of paints a picture of the school situation versus elsewhere. So in terms of process, so we have the Department of Ed's mandate that was requiring masks for all individuals in the school setting. And I just wanted to kind of share the language from the waiver approval letter, that Franklin High School's request is approved. Vaccinated individuals in the school are not currently subject to the department's mask requirement, but they can choose to continue to wear a mask. That's where your policy comes into play. Your policy then requires a face covering must be worn by all individuals in school buildings and on school transportation. And you also have language that the district may modify its mask requirements in accordance with DESE guidance. So your policy would still have individuals' mask unless you change it. I also want to note, too, that the Department of Education continues to be clear regarding their expectation for unvaccinated individuals, and that unvaccinated students and staff are still required to continue wearing masks. I think it's also important to note for everybody in the community that the department is reserving the right, following consultation with medical experts and state health officials, to reinstitute the department's mask requirement at the high school if it becomes appropriate based on state and local public health data. So that is a direct quote from DESE and how it relates to your policy. Because of this requirement of unvaccinated students and staff, what is being proposed is aiming to be kind of thoughtful and sensitive around a multitude of issues and concerns around the possibility of vaccinated individuals choosing to wear a mask. So, Lucas, I'm going to use this slide to summarize.
Okay.
I just want to walk through. Can you jump forward?
Yep.
I'm sorry, go back, sorry. No, go back to the summary slide, I'll break it down. Okay. Proposed timeline and considerations. So we are currently heading into the Thanksgiving holiday. We also want some time to do some communication with faculty and staff. They know of this proposal. But there's a faculty meeting on December 1st, so we want to be sure to, if you were to approve this, talk more with the faculty on December 1st, as well as create a process around which we feel we could implement the requirement for unvaccinated individuals and those who don't have permission to take their masks off to be followed up with. So the idea is that everybody at Franklin High School would continue to wear masks until December 10th, which is the next 2 weeks. The masks would become optional for vaccinated students and staff only on December 13th until we head into winter break on December 23rd. Masks would be worn by all following the winter break, January 3rd through 7th, giving us a little time to see if there would be any increased case counts in the community after the winter break. And then masks become optional for vaccinated students and staff from January 10th onward. I think we, I would advise that the policy be, like any policy really, be continually observed and evaluated and monitored over time. In terms of how we propose to monitor this, the idea would be that over the next 2 weeks, families would complete an attestation form. It would have basically three components. The first is that the parent and guardian is attesting that their child is vaccinated. Now, we already have that information confirmed, but this is just sort of the logical thought process as a parent in terms of what you would be checking off. So that the child is vaccinated, that the child is permitted to remove their mask, and that there is permission being granted to share the information with faculty and staff. And this is a process that is being applied in some other districts who have either moved forward or have their school committee has voted that they can move forward. I think it's important to note masks would still be required for unvaccinated students and staff. I don't anticipate that all vaccinated individuals would remove their mask. I think some would continue to leave their mask on. So I think we would continue to reinforce the message that that mask wearing is not an indication of vaccination status. All visitors, regardless of vaccination status, would still be required to wear a mask. Per federal law, individuals in the nurse's office and on buses or school transportation would need to continue to wear their mask. I think it would be important, given the expectation for visitors, that spectators and audience members at indoor events, regardless of vaccination status, would be expected to wear a mask. And vaccinated individuals, so students and staff identified as close contacts, would have to wear a mask for 14 days following that exposure. Faculty and staff would let the administrators know if there was a concern. The information would be shared with faculty and staff. We don't necessarily want faculty and staff being on the front line, per se, and getting into contentious or difficult conversations. The administrators would follow up any non-compliance through a progressive approach, starting first with a conversation to encourage compliance. Okay, now go ahead. Just to repeat a point, I think it's really important to make it a safe place. I think there are some concerns that that private information would be shared, anticipated that both vaccinated and unvaccinated individuals would be wearing masks. From Hopkinton, I want to say about 40% of the vaccinated students and staff continue to wear masks in the school setting in their 3-week trial period, which just ended. So I think we would expect vaccinated individuals some to continue. And of course, we would be on alert and expect that unkind behavior or bullying based on mask wearing would not be tolerated. A couple other points, and we have an update as of today. The MIAA came out with the expectations for athletics, which is that the mask wearing would be the same as it is in the fall. So student athletes, coaches, and I don't think that's supposed to say offices, officials, will be required to wear masks both in schools and in off-campus venues, will remain apprised of any changes. I thought their language was a little confusing about those with 80%, so I still need a little bit of clarification on that for practices if we were to go to a mask optional situation for students. I think we've seen some other communities discussing some metrics. here are a couple things that I think would be wise to keep track of, and we are keeping track of them. The 14-day percent positivity rate being less than 4%. 5% is kind of a, in talking with Kathy Liberty and the Board of Health, 5% is kind of that area where it's highly concerning in terms of the rate of transmission. 4% is a little bit of a harbinger that you may be headed in that direction. So 4% is a more conservative number, so it would be less than 4. I know Medway had put out a number of 2. I just talking with Kathy Liberty and from the health department, she was comfortable with this. We want to, I think, be able to reserve the right to have people mask again if there's in-school transmission or clusters in a particular classroom or grade or activity. The high school, with everybody kind of spreading around, I think it would be very, very different than the middle or elementary school. But we would be mindful of clusters based on classroom activity. And similar to what the Department of Education said, recognizing that it's a fluid situation, monitor it and determine if additional metrics or provisions may need to be established based on the circumstances. And lastly, I put this in my memo too. Want to summarize that masks are but one of several mitigation strategies applied across the district. Vaccination certainly is one. People may be aware that boosters are now approved for everybody who may want to get them. And so that may be something that folks want to consider. The data on breakthrough cases, I think, is pretty compelling in terms of the waning effectiveness of the boosters. So vaccination is one measure. We do have UVGI throughout the entire school, and you may not have seen it, so I put in a picture to the presentation so you can see what the UVGI looks like. That is an enormous box on top of the Franklin High School. We have portable HEPA filtration units. They are applied in classrooms, and while I think our faculty and staff in general are in favor and would welcome the option to take off their mask, that's not universal. And we certainly would provide extra HEPA filtration units or extra PPE or mitigation to those who request. Hand hygiene, monitoring symptoms, and staying home when sick. It's a little plug, I think, too, as we head into the winter months. We have test and stay for close contacts, and symptomatic COVID testing is now up and running at Franklin High School as well, which is another mitigation measure. That is the last of the presentation. Mr. Hanna is watching the webinar and is here if you have any specific questions related to the high school.
So are you recommending approval?
So yes, thank you. I recommend approval of the proposal for optional mask wearing by vaccinated students and staff at Franklin High School as discussed.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All right, discussion, questions? I'll start at the top. Camille?
Thank you for the information. I have a few questions. I appreciate the information about the 40% in Hopkinton who are vaxxed to still wear a mask. Do we have any other information? Because they ended, they did their trial from November 1st to 19th, so that was only last Friday that they ended. Do we have any other information or feedback from them about how it went?
The feedback I had from a qualitative standpoint was that it was relatively smooth, that the attestation form and the communication was relatively smooth over at their high school, and that they did not see breakouts of cases.
I have a couple other questions. You mentioned the symptomatic COVID testing is up and running. Is that rapid testing? How does that work?
I'll turn it over to Paul.
Yes, it's 15 minutes. It's the Binex Now test, so it's 15 minutes. So, there's a set criteria that our nursing staff has developed, and we've through the DESE guidance of who can test and who has to just go home with PCR testing, you know, if it's like the bolded COVID symptoms. But yes, it's a 15-minute test, so they would come down to the nurse's office, they would get swabbed, wait 15 minutes, and then if it was negative, they could go back to class, depending on what the symptoms are.
Is that COVID testing available for staff, too?
Yes, it is available for staff.
I guess my only concern is the, you know, with the uptick around the holidays, I do appreciate the pacing of it. Is there any plan for pool testing?
So we don't have a plan for pool testing. Our participation in pool testing last year was less than 50%, probably something like 40%.
Actually, for students, it was 26%.
Yikes.
26%. I think with that was before vaccines. So I am not optimistic about getting to the threshold. We've heard Medway had put out, you know, kind of an expectation of 50%, and they're still not there. So I think we're a little reluctant. From a logistics standpoint, it was a really heavy lift to do pool testing, particularly in a school the size of Franklin High School. And we had a fair number of false positives.
Okay.
So so our experience was not great.
Right. Even with, we had 320 student consents, but only on an average 118 students participated weekly in the pool testing because we can't, you know, who came down, actually came down to be swabbed. So so really the participation rate wasn't there for the lift, the amount of lift that we had for our nursing staff.
Thank you so much.
David?
Thank you. First, thanks for really kind of expanding the policy itself with the slides. Answered a lot of questions, including the how long a vaccinated person who would be identified as a close contact would have to continue wearing the mask. So thank you very much for that. And just want to confirm in terms of the attestation, so that's backed and verified with an actual health document to confirm it.
Yes, yep.
And then just one question in terms of towards the bottom, it talks about if there's like a 4% positivity rate and other metrics that would cause a pause in the policy. First, how quickly would we be able to hit the pause button? Is this, if we were notified, you know, about the certain metrics, you know, in the evening, is this an email that goes out to the community to say effective tomorrow morning, the mask requirement is back in place, or is this something that may take a few days before we're able to resume?
The number comes out Thursday night. I think it could be, practically speaking, a little difficult to send an email and get full compliance for Friday, but certainly by Monday, we would be able to get that up and running.
Okay, perfect. And then, if should we have to hit the pause button on this, some time goes by, the numbers start to drop back down to below 4%, how exactly would we be able to reinstate the mask optional policy? Is this something that would just kind of happen automatically, or would have to be reevaluated and reapproved by the school committee?
So I think that it's something that we would continually monitor. I think in the initial inception of this, it would be if it falls below 4%, masks would become optional again. Practically speaking, I think that there would be weeks where it might hover at that number. I'm just looking at some of our data from where it's been recently. I don't think it'll drop super automatically, so I think there would probably be an opportunity for some measure of school committee check-in and conversation at a meeting. But my thought would be that if it fell below 4 and there's no in-school transmission or clusters going on in the school, that the masks could become optional again.
Okay, thank you very much.
Al?
So I do have a few questions. So I guess, first of all, what is the climate in the school? What are the students and the teachers and the faculty feeling? Because that's for Principal Hannah.
Yeah, I think Mr. Hannah might best be able to answer that.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I think the climate in the school is one that is changing. It has been changing over the course of the last year and a half. So, you know, as the data continues to evolve, I think, you know, depending upon who you ask, there would have opinions and thoughts that could differ from day to day. But I would say overall, based on the experiences that we are seeing happening in our school, particularly during lunch and after school, and with the general kind of mask wearing mandates in other parts of our lives, both student and staff-wise, our community is comfortable with a, you know, moving forward with a program that would allow for the mask to be optional based on choice.
I think, if I could just jump in and add to that, I think mask compliance has waned since the beginning of the year. In unstructured and less supervised settings, there's a lot of dropping of the mask and putting it under the nose. And when that's happening with almost 1,700 students there, and when it's happening with the majority of them, that's a hard enforcement to manage. In and of itself when it's so universal. So I think that there is some readiness, like Mr. Hanna says, although I do say that, and I know he shares this, and he had this caveat as well. It's not universal. There are individuals who are uncomfortable, have some personal medical or family medical situations or just some anxiety around COVID. And so we do need to take, I think, great care and be kind across the board. But I think in general, like Josh says, it's probably the majority have that comfort level.
Okay, thank you. The next question. So we'll say it goes into effect. Somebody's not vaccinated. They decide to then become vaccinated so they can take off their mask. What is that time frame from vaccination, attestation, to being able to take off that mask? What does that look like?
That is a good question. I think it could be relatively quick in time frame, where the individual becomes fully vaccinated 2 weeks after the second dose, and the attestation form comes in, and it would be integrated into our student management system, so that the notification goes out, for example, with a class list, and when teachers are taking attendance, they can see that, and the administrators have access to that. So I think it could be fairly quick.
Cool, thank you. Also, one concern I've heard from families is around just folks that are not vaccinated that are not complying. So I guess, I know you mentioned that there's an approach. Could you delve into that a little bit more, like what that looks like? And
sure, I think that might be a good question for Josh to answer from an administrative.
Sure, so there's a lot of different models that have been implemented across the state regarding how to interact with these types of decisions. And I think as a team, we've kind of laid it out that the information would be with the teacher regarding who has been officially deemed as okay through the various documents that will be, you know, asking people to sign to not wear a mask. And for those students who are not identified as that, it would start with a conversation. First of all, we wouldn't want to be engaging in personal discussions around one's health in a classroom setting in front of potentially 25 or 30 other students or humans. And so we would have our assistant principals have conversations and learn a bit more about why, you know, the mask went on. Was there a paper error, or what is it that's going on regarding your or their inability to kind of follow the expectation? And 99 out of 100 times, that conversation with a call home and kind of a commitment to what we're trying to do will solve that situation. But in the rare cases where that doesn't occur, then we would, step through our normal kind of discipline process, which would, begin with, detention, and then Friday reflection, and then, really wanting to avoid any type of like time outside of the classroom, but realizing if we have, folks that aren't willing to follow through with our safety protocols, and the danger that could be putting, other people in, both physically and emotionally, that we would have to follow up with, some more extreme versions of that. Again, not anticipating that, but making sure that we have that as a part of our process.
Okay, thank you. And then last question. So given where we're at, and there's a lot of COVID fatigue and mass fatigue, and then we've seen an uptick of numbers in other places, has there been any thought to pause until after the holidays so we can get through the period of busyness with, you know, the holidays and whatnot, people just getting together, and maybe pushing this back to maybe June 17th, when it's after, you know, 2 weeks after the holidays, and we can see what the outcome has been.
January.
I think that's certainly something that the school committee could choose to do, is to extend it past into the January timeframe. I think that the uptick in numbers came relatively quickly within the past week or two. That's my reaction, and my reflection is that the numbers upticked rather quickly just in recent weeks. We have not seen the same uptick at Franklin High School. Mm-hmm. I do know, and I've been in touch with some superintendents from some other districts, they are seeing an uptick, not just in the younger children, but also with older students as well. We are not seeing that. Just checked in with Paula before tonight to be able to share that, but I do understand the concern and some of the modeling that's coming forward potentially after Thanksgiving. So that could be something that the school committee chooses.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Through you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Ahern, for this presentation. I think it's so important that we're doing this through a thoughtful process and with this detailed plan, and of course the safety of our students, teachers, faculty, and staff, and the broader community as a whole is of paramount importance. So it's important that we're taking our time to implement this. So a couple questions. Mentions the test and state policy would remain. So how would this be affected in any ways? Like, for example, would there be a scenario where only close contacts would be required to wear a mask, or would test and stay policy just stay as it is now, or would there be any changes in that regard?
So I don't think there would be any changes. I think some of the close contact identification may alter a little bit, and I'm gonna ask Paula to chime in.
Sure, so right now, if you're vaccinated and you're masked, you're exempt from quarantining and participating in test and stay. So because students would be unmasked, we might have to look at that a little bit differently and allow vaccinated, unmasked close contacts to participate in the test and stay program, just to see how that would to keep a closer eye on it. We might test them all on day 5 after exposure, where right now they're exempt completely from test and stay. So we might kind of uptick the qualifications for make it less stringent for test and stay as we monitor the cases and whatnot. So
thank you. And then another question. You mentioned that in Hockington they hadn't seen any recent uptick when they implemented their policy, but what best practices have we learned from other towns that have already implemented their waivers, and how have those been incorporated into our plan?
So there are a small number of districts that have qualified for waivers. Hopkinton was the first one to pursue it with their 3-week trial. It's relatively new.
There are 11, and yeah. Hopkinton was the first.
Yeah, so I think a lot of the conversation now is among the 11 districts, how might people be rolling it out? Ashland took a vote last week, and their proposal is similar with the attestation form and implementation time frame as well, looking at December 13th.
Thank you.
Elise?
I guess one of my questions is similar to what Camille and Al brought up too, about starting in December and then going on winter vacation and then waiting another week and then starting up again. And as part of that, I guess I wonder about the boosters, like how do boosters factor into this? So if people have been more than 6 months since they got their second dose, they're recommended to get a booster, but how does this work? We haven't really talked about boosters at all here, so I don't know if that's gonna be, like, is that gonna become a criteria that's on the attestation, or like, have you thought about boosters, I guess, the question?
I haven't, and I think in part that's because the waiver was based on DESE's original definition of fully vaccinated being the two doses and 80%. So I think timing wise, you know, we're getting into the 6 month window of individuals who are vaccinated in May or June. Older students would have been in that category, being able to get vaccinated kind of early summer timeframe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a relevant question, but I'm also I think bound a little bit by to a certain extent you could factor boosters in, but the waiver was based not on boosters, so it hasn't really factored into the consideration up until this point.
Yeah, through the chair. Just to add to that also is the boosters are only approved for 18 and over, so our high school students wouldn't be technically able to get a booster unless they worked in a high-risk job. And right now, CDC has not changed their definition of fully vaccinated. Fully vaccinated still is for two doses, and a booster is just a booster. So until that changes, I think that will be something to consider.
Gotcha, that's helpful. I guess sort of regardless of that, if we as a committee decide that we would be comfortable letting sort of working the bugs out to December behind the scenes and then starting to implement this a week or two after, not June 14th, but possibly January, then I think I would be comfortable with that if other people here are too. Just my opinion.
Okay. I through you, Manager. Thanks for the clarification about the booster. That was my understanding, was 18 and up as well. Let's see here. So a lot of good questions, sorry for this. So I would imagine that, the whatever the definition of fully vaccinated is, I mean, who knows if that would change or not, to include the boosters and all that stuff. I just think really just keeping an eye on the data is critical, right, to really stop, living with this virus and, really start, eliminating it. I think that's all I have. Thank you, Manager.
Thank you. I think first, it's unfortunate to hear that there's such non-compliance with our older students when I see and hear that the younger students are much more apt to follow the rules. So that's kind of just on a personal level upsetting. You would think that the older children could behave better, but what do I know? Test and stay. When does this occur? Is this first thing in the morning, midday?
So we try to get it as soon as we can in the morning. However, we've received guidance from DPH. As long as it happens throughout ideally it's in the morning.
Yeah.
But we have all day to do it because it really depends on, you could have enough viral load at the end of the day more than you would at the beginning of the day. So it really, there's really no difference. We try to do the best we can with the staffing that we have. So.
Oh, yeah. I know that the nursing staff is our
They are working their tails off. And I do, yes. Again, another kudos to CIC Health, who has been wonderful in helping us providing testers. So,
And I just want to confirm that we are not just going off of parent attestation boards.
No.
Is being paired with vaccination.
Correct. Records. We are getting the proof of vaccination through the MIIS state site,
mm-hmm.
and then that's downloading into SNAP, our nursing software program, information system program. If we don't have that information, then we are asking for actual copies of vaccination cards. Okay. So we are our nurses are actually seeing the proof.
Okay. I guess I'd just like to understand how we're going to track who should be wearing a mask, who shouldn't be wearing a mask. The teachers who are already stretched very thin, they're supposed to all of a sudden be mask wearing enforcers.
So our IT department would upload or create a field based on the attestation form and upload, and we would create a notation through our student management system, which teachers are using on a daily basis for things like attendance.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be kind of updated on a daily basis with new attestations that come in. So that's how the information would kind of be centralized and disseminated out. And the teachers would then communicate with the administration if somebody needed some follow-up.
And just, I know that someone else had brought up the uptick. You know, I have actually the numbers here too. So November 1st this year, there are 3,308. November 1st this year, November 1st last year was 842. November 23rd this year, 6,801. November 23rd last year, 1,173. So, I mean, it seems like it's suboptimal uptick of members across the state. I guess that's it.
Madam Chair, can I?
Of course you can.
I would like to reemphasize the stress on teachers to have to be fighting. It already, when everyone's supposed to wear a mask, they're already, in my own experience where I teach, it can be quite combative. Mm-hmm. And I am very concerned about teachers who are stretched thin, as you said, and are pushed to the limit right now to have to put that added burden. So I would just ask Mr. Hanna to make sure that they are supported, that their teaching is not affected by having to deal with tomfoolery. It's really stressful. It's really stressful. I also would support, would be much more comfortable if it happened after the holidays. And a couple reasons why is people are traveling to locations and having guests from locations outside Massachusetts. And so we can't consider just our own town and also just Massachusetts. Students are traveling overseas, they're going everywhere during Thanksgiving and Christmas, December holidays. And I wonder too if the uptick, I don't know, I'm just basing it on my own children's behavior, but the uptick might be related to the time change and also the colder weather. So kids are moving inside and being together inside, unmasked often. And teenagers especially unmasked with all their friends. So I'm concerned about that uptick. And the timing of this may be premature.
Okay. Anyone else? Mr. Charles?
Yeah, sorry, I lied.
Don't say sorry.
I think David mentioned around Test and Stay. Do we have the enrollment numbers of Test and Stay and what would happen once we do this? Like, are we going to see more students that are not enrolled in Test and Stay that will have to now go home and not be able to go to school? Or will that population, or is that population already enrolled in Test and Stay and they still remain in school?
I don't have the exact numbers with me tonight, but I can actually get those numbers for you. But I, you know, oftentimes if we have students who do not have consent for Test and Stay, it takes one phone call, and most parents are consenting to it. Most parents are not choosing quarantine, but actually consenting to Test and Stay. So within probably 24 to 48 hours, we do have consent, and then can implement the Test and Stay for that student. So
perfect.
We've actually seen an uptick in our consents.
Great. And I guess, and then as part of this plan, can we make sure that we at least get a recommunication out there to get folks enrolled in Test and Stay if they're not enrolled today?
Absolutely. And I would imagine that will go out in this communication as well. Whatever your decision is, that we would say, here's the consent link. We encourage you to consent in Test and Stay.
Thank you.
And symptomatic testing, because it's the same consent.
Mr. Callahan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One comment in terms of the December 13th, the trial date. First, if there is, a unfortunate continued trend upwards in the cases, even the trial date itself may be paused, just based on the metrics themselves. I understand it certainly, there would be individuals from outside just on our own community, but with the trial date, with the December 13th date, there is a chance that even if the numbers do continue to climb, the clauses that we already have in the policy would kind of put a halt on it even before it gets off its feet. And I would imagine as much that the theory would be that having some kind of a trial period like this, not only does it kind of, if there's any bugs, we continue to work them out, but it might also have a positive unintended side effect of an increase in vaccination rates as well, from the trial period until when the period restarts as well.
Thank
That's
you.
All.
Thank you.
Yes. Ms. Stokes.
I think that Camille and Denise made good points about the burden on teachers. And so I wonder if sort of if the attestations are rolling in, it's hard as a teacher to know who in this room actually is and who's not, like constantly referring back to the student database. Whereas if there was a way we could have, you know, attestations coming in over the next couple weeks up until January, and then it's sort of like you know who in your classroom is. And obviously there'll be still a couple rolling in as they go, but it might be easier for staff just to know sort of who is and who is not in one fell swoop rather than a little bit different every day.
Yes.
I may as well make a second round. So yeah, through your manager. I would support like suspending this till January as well. Just more data, and just see how you know how things are trending. And like I said, getting staff sort of like accustomed with sort of like the status, vaccination status of the students too. And one more thing too. If the definition of fully vaccinated, if that doesn't get altered, I wonder if we could possibly maybe stipulate like, you know, fully vaccinated and, you know, if 6 months have passed since that date to then also have a booster to, I don't know if we're allowed to add that lingo or statement into that or not, but I think that makes sense with the waning vaccine status, but that's all I have.
Anyone else? No? Okay. All right, so we have...
Through the chair, am I able to just add to a few of the comments that have been raised up to this point? This is Josh.
Of course.
Okay, I can appreciate the hesitation of moving forward right now, considering, you know, we're seeing some rate changes, but I just want to advocate for the students at the high school who throughout the first 10 weeks have regularly met the expectations that we have set forth. And I do want to just portray what at times feels like a difficult mandate to digest when we have certain areas of the building for parts of the day where masks are not expected to be worn when they're eating, and then all of a sudden they are expected to be worn. And I think that kind of hypocritical process that we have, although we're doing it in the best intentions and the students are willing to meet us halfway, we are trying to raise critical thinkers, and part of the policies at times feel unclear. And I think, you know, when we're dealing with adolescents who are attempting to find truths and push boundaries, which is appropriate, when we have policies like this in play, it puts us as a school, both teachers and administrators, in a tough spot. Where we are one of the few institutions in the area that is mandating masks. And so I wouldn't feel as though I was doing my job advocating for our students and our school if I weren't to just ask for your understanding of that particular lens as you consider the proposal. Because of course we'll do what, you know, is asked of us. And if it's in January, then it's in January. But I just, you know, to visit the school and to see the different environments that we have and to see the effort that the students have put forth leading up to this point, but then the confusion around when and where we have to wear masks and don't have to wear masks, I just feel as though it sets us up in a confusing place. I'll put it that way. In 20 years in working with high school students, one of the things I've come to realize is most important is that you set your ground rules early, they make sense, they're respectful, and then everyone can agree to get on the same page. When there's policies and practices that are difficult to get your head around or shift from varied times and places, it's harder to kind of keep that momentum going. And I feel like we do have some momentum right now, and I just wanted to honor that with all due respect to the committee with those words. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hanna.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Vote will come on the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
I'm sorry, if I get clarification, we're voting on passing it in January or?
No, as is.
Okay.
There was no motion to amend.
All right. No.
All right. So, I'm sorry. You were no.
You were
yeah, roll, okay. Roll call. Camille?
No.
No. All right. David?
Aye.
Al?
No.
Dave?
Aye.
Elise?
Yes.
Megan?
No.
All right. I am a yes. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 4-3. All right. Motion carries. Is that better? Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. Okay. Moving right along, discussion only items. All right. So wanting to be as transparent as possible as a new school committee, should I read the entire thing, the entire response?
I don't think you need to. I think you could summarize
it. Okay, perfect. So on a complaint filed October 28th concerning the October 26th meeting of the Franklin School Committee, a resident, a citizen of Massachusetts, filed an open meeting law complaint. And with respect to the requests, the chair and the committee acted appropriately within the scope of their authority. There's no transcript as the chair called a recess due to disruptive behavior. And the committee does not intend to take further action in response to the complaint. As such, there has been no open meeting law violation. That's it. Perfect. Done.
And that was sent along to the attorney's office and the complainant after you signed it.
Yes, correct. All right, information matters. Tonight at our workshop, we went over our subcommittee and liaison roles, responsibilities. I expect that the next meeting will have some updates. Let's see, SWAC did not meet.
Next meeting is December 7th.
Okay, Substance Abuse Task Force.
December 14th.
Okay.
Our next meeting.
Do you want to toot your own horn about the critical conversations?
I would just echo what Dr. Hearn mentioned earlier, and the community can't expect a video, a live stream recording with the resources that we shared. We promised folks in attendance that we would share those out with the links to everything. So it'll all be digital. And if they'd like hard copies of The Ride Home, we're going to be distributing those at each of the schools in the district so that people could get one when they're visiting.
Oh, great. I know that Dr. Bergen worked hard on that, so
yes.
She'll love that. All right, Dr. Hearn, new business.
So new business, at the next school committee meeting, the chair and I discussed having another workshop at 6 o'clock. We would do some initial things related to school finance. Mm-hmm. We have a lifelong learning presentation queued up for you. The interim executive director, Patty Gay, will come and share more about lifelong learning. And that covers the big items.
Perfect. Moving along to consent agenda.
I recommend approval of the minutes from the November 9th, 2021 school committee meeting as detailed. I recommend approval of the budget transfers as detailed. I recommend acceptance of a check for $461.82 from All American Publishing for supplemental supplies for the athletics department as detailed. I recommend acceptance of a check for $2,100 from the Annie Sullivan PCC for in-house enrichment as detailed. And I recommend acceptance of a check for $3,227.12 from the Parmenter PCC for supplemental supplies as detailed.
Okay. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any questions, concerns, nothing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just one question about the budget transfers through you, Madam Chair. The $75,000 from classroom teachers to counseling services. Can you have some details on that?
I'm going to have to get those details from Miriam.
From Miriam.
Tonight.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
Sorry
about that.
That's okay. So can we vote on everything but that?
You want to get pulled up? Does this have anything to do with what was discussed at the last town council meeting? The 93,000? No?
No. No, we would go through budget subcommittee for that.
Okay.
So
I'm not sure exactly why this transfer is in here, and I apologize for not having that ahead of time.
That's okay. I should have emailed because I told her she wasn't coming.
Try texting her, but
oh no, she's on the road.
She's traveling.
She's on her phone.
She's traveling. You're alone. I guess I was just interested because I think counseling support is so necessary and needed that I thought it was probably a good thing, but wanted to know.
I don't think it reflects any cut in services, just an accounting shift. Based on what was in the budget and what's being expended. So I'm sorry. No.
She's there?
Oh, no.
That's her date.
I know, right?
Natalie's.
No, it's fine. Okay.
No, boundaries. It's fine.
Right. Is there a reason why we can't hold until the next meeting?
We could hold that till the next meeting if you wanted
to satisfy Ms. Stokes.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right, so I'd like to make an amendment to the motion to remove B, transfers, approval of the budget transfers as detailed.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a second? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Okay, so A, C, D, E. All right. Vote will come on the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Motion carries. All right, payment of bills. I did review the bills. They are in order. Ms. Stokes.
I reviewed the payroll and it is in order.
Okay. All right, so for executive session. So we will be adjourning to executive session and we will be returning to open meeting. So I would entertain a motion to adjourn into executive discussion as detailed. Pursuant to Mass General Law, Chapter 30A, Section 21A3, to discuss strategy with respect to litigation, as an open meeting may have a detrimental effect on the litigating position of the public body and the chair so declares. Pursuant to Mass General Law, Chapter 30A, Section 21A3, to discuss strategy with respect to collective bargaining with the FEARN unit, as an open meeting may have a detrimental effect on the bargaining position of the school committee and the chair so declares. Pursuant to Mass General Law, Chapter 30A, Section 21A2, to conduct collective bargaining with the FEARN unit as an open meeting may have a detrimental effect on the bargaining position of the school committee and the chair so declares, and to return in open session. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All right, so do you roll call?
Yep.
Okay. Roll call. Camille?
Yes.
Dave?
Aye.
Al?
Yes.
Dave?
Aye.
Elise?
Yes.
Megan?
Aye.
Denise? Yes. Okay, so we will adjourn and we will be returning to executive session. Time being 9:56, I reopen the November 23rd Bingham School Committee meeting. Okay, Dr. Hearn.
Great, thank you to the chair. At this point in time, I would recommend that the school committee vote to ratify the memorandum of agreement with the Franklin Educators Association.
Okay. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Roll call vote. Camille?
Yes.
David?
Aye.
Al?
Yes.
Dave?
Aye.
Elise?
Yes.
Megan?
Yes.
And Denise? Yes. Okay. There we go. Are we all set, Dr. Hearn?
All set. Thank you.
Perfect. All right. And at this time, time being 9:57, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All right. Perfect. Tons of them. All right. All in favor?
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right. Thank you, everyone. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.